I think it's really important to have that growth mindset and that there's nothing to be gained by resisting change. And for so many of us, it's hard to be positive and optimistic in the face of change. And so much is changing right now, right? Everybody's talking about AI and ChatGPT. But I think embracing growth and approaching situations as a learning opportunity helps, I think, with positivity and being optimistic. It may not be comfortable, but if instead of concentrating on the discomfort, we kind of open ourselves up to seeing the value, I think can be helpful with that.
Welcome to the Get Unstuck Fast Viscosity podcast, brought to you by VLM training and coaching specialists across the UK and Australia, hosted by me, Vicky Main. Are you a business owner, leader, or executive? Have you ever felt stuck or disappointed where your life or business is heading? Do you ever feel overwhelmed, compare yourself to others, or feel like you're swimming in treacle at times? This podcast is here to help you get unstuck fast, from viscosity to achieving escape velocity and expanding your knowledge. Our guests on the show will share practical tips and real life experience about how they got out of negative situations or circumstances to live their best life on their terms. We will be sharing real life stories from real people doing some incredible things. Stay tuned for our next guest.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 9 of the Get Unstuck Fast Viscosity Podcast. I'm your host, Vicky Main, and today we have Deborah Conrad, who's the Entrepreneurial Mindset Profile Product Director at the Leadership Development Institute at Eckerd College in Florida in the United States. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you, Vicky. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And I'm so excited to have you on the show and hear all about what you've been up to and all of your depth and breadth of experience. So I want to kick off by asking you, can you tell our listeners about your career journey and what you've been doing in the past, where you are now, and tell us a bit more about yourself.
Goodness, my career journey, it's a little bit of a zigzag. I'm currently, as you said, the EMP product director, Entrepreneurial Mindset Profile product director, but I was the kid who really didn't love math and science anywhere as much as I did foreign languages. And so as soon as I had the chance, I took French in middle school and just loved it. And in high school, I started taking Italian as well. And I was fascinated. I lived in New Jersey growing up, and I'd go into Manhattan and to the museums, and I'd follow around people listening to them speaking foreign languages. I just always found it fascinating. In high school, my teachers had told me about the opportunity for a summer program to go to a college campus and study a language. And I thought, well, let me choose something different, something that wasn't Latin-based. And so I kind of narrowed it down between Russian, Chinese, and Japanese, and thought about where I might want to travel to and the food I enjoy, and picked Japanese. So as a high schooler, I showed up thinking that everybody else in the class during the summer was going to also be a high school student. And it turned out that wasn't the case at all. My kid was adults, either college students taking a class for the summer or adults getting ready to go on a business trip. But it was an adventure to me, and I loved it, and then decided I wanted to look for a four-year university that would allow me to study abroad for a year, live with a family, go to school there, and study. And that's what I did. I was that kid that actually knew what I wanted to study, stuck with my major, and then graduated and used my major. A rarity. But when I first left college, I went to Japan to teach English at a senior high school. The government there actually has a program called the Japan Exchange Teaching Program, the JET program. And they hire folks to either be an assistant language teacher in the school. So you work with a Japanese teacher of English and you team teach and you go into the classroom. And so Japanese students learn English growing up, but it's more the grammar, and the government wants students to really use and speak the language. And so they brought in these assistant language teachers to team teach and get the kids to really dig in and speak, right, and interact. And so I would play games and help them with vocabulary and team teach alongside these teachers. So it was an awesome experience for me because I had lived with a family and been there as a student, but now I was living in an apartment of my own and was commuting to this senior high school and working with all of these Japanese teachers. So I've had two great, great experiences living over there. But then the curiosity side of me really wanted to know, okay, what am I going to do with my skill set? And I was just curious, you know, once I got back to the US, and although I could have stayed up to 3 years doing the teaching in Japan, I kind of spun the wheel a chance and came back to the US. And my family had moved from New Jersey to Florida. My father had taken a job in Florida. And so I thought, oh, well, I can look at jobs in Orlando, Florida, where Disney World is and Universal Studios is, thinking that there are tons of Japanese tourists who visit those parks. They must need people who speak Japanese. But I quickly learned that they don't hire solely on the base of foreign language skills. You need to be able to offer something else. And so I was actually interviewing with international banks and credit card companies, thinking, oh, I can just get in on the bottom floor. They're international. You know, maybe there's an opportunity there. And I really believe, Vicky, that it was the universe that put things into place. I went to the Japan America Society with my resume and just to find out what was available in Florida. And it turns out that they were launching the Golf Channel. It was at the time a 24-hour cable network, and it was 24 hours a day, golf TV. And I knew nothing about television. I knew nothing about golf. And the woman who worked there, I think they were trying to recruit her to go over and try to launch this network in Japan. It had already launched in 1995 in the States. And she ended up sending my resume and I got a phone call, and I'll just fast forward. The rest is history. I joined as a interpreter, commentator assistant, had to read Golf for Dummies the night before my interview.
Wow.
Set off on a journey that ended up lasting 21 years and 9 months. I went on to work with our commentary team, ultimately ended up running the Japanese operations department at the network. And then I made a total switch after almost 22 years, partially because my father-in-law and my mother-in-law had started coming down to Florida as snowbirds. And it was just my father-in-law who was left, and he was needing to go into assisted living. My husband and I made the decision to want to be closer. And it brought me over to St. Petersburg. Eckerd College happened to be a small private liberal arts school right down the street from where we were going to be living. And on a whim, I looked there and found out that one of my Japanese professors from university was working at Eckerd College, which was just a total coincidence.
Wow.
And I looked at this Leadership Development Institute. So at Eckerd College, they've got a very large division of executive and continuing education. And on the executive education side is the Leadership Development Institute. And they had posted this job for an entrepreneurial mindset profile manager. And I started in this, and people talk about, oh, soft skills. Are they soft skills? Are they human skills? But truly, that's what allowed me to make the total switch from running the Japanese operations department to now taking on this psychometric assessment and working in business development and marketing and sales and client relations. It's been a wild journey, but it'll be 5 years in July since I joined the team, and it's been wonderful.
Wow, 5 years. That's incredible. You certainly, and 21 years in your previous company, that you certainly are very loyal as well to organizations. Yeah. And obviously when you enjoy what you do, that really, you know, that's standout. And I mean, you mentioned how you got the job at Eckerd College because of your former colleague, a Japanese colleague as well. And tell us more about your role at Eckerd College now and what you're doing with the Entrepreneurial Mindset Profile Tool.
Absolutely. And just to clarify, it was just a coincidence that she worked there. She was actually on a hiatus while all of that happened to be going on, but it was just more of a sign like, wow, you know, the world's colliding. But I was very lucky that I was considered for the role, considering I wasn't, you know, coming from academia at all. But in terms of what I do at Eckerd was, I'm sorry, that was your question?
Yeah, so your role, and I mean, I know having worked with you previously, I know how diligent and how detailed you are, and you are so good with detail. And that's one of the things I love working about you with you, Deborah, because you are very concise and your depth and breadth of knowledge about the products that you offer is phenomenal. And I think that's a transferable skill, I guess, from TV, having to be so detailed in working in that industry and then transferring across to education. I guess the question was about you. Tell me about your role and what you're doing now with the Entrepreneurial Mindset Profile, and maybe what does the future hold for your role?
Absolutely. So my role is pretty diverse. We are a small but mighty team, as I like to say. So the profile itself, just to give the listener some background, it's an online psychometric assessment. It's validated, reliable. It takes about 10 to 15 minutes to complete. And as you know, as a master trainer of the Entrepreneurial Mindset Profile, yep, Vicky, we certify individuals who would like to administer the EMP to others. And a large number of academics or professors who are using it in their classrooms and organizations who want to gather data of folks and see if they can move the needle on these 14 scales that the EMP measures, right? So the researchers who put together the instrument wanted to see what's the difference between entrepreneurs and non-entrepreneurs. Yeah. And through their research, they narrowed it down to 14 scales. 7 of them are personality, 7 of them are skills. And we believe that everybody is able to move the needle on them. It may be a little harder to move on the personality scales because those are more hardwired, but the assessment, when you get your results in the form of a feedback report, comes with a development guide, and it addresses what each score means. If you have a high score, how that may, you know, show up for you. If you have a super high score where you may be overplaying that strength, right? You may call it your entrepreneurial superpower, but, you know, persistence or passion, you can overplay those strengths to the point where they might be detrimental. And then, of course, if it's a lower score and it's relevant to your context, right? Because all 14 of them, it's not necessarily important for you to be high in all 14. We're not all Jeff Bezos. We believe that you want to look at what's relevant to your context and be aware of the different entrepreneurial strengths that we each bring to a team or to a group, so everyone can leverage where they're strong. But there is a development guide that talks through different tips and ways that you could increase your score or become stronger in those areas. So it's my job to work with our practitioners. So the folks who want to go through the certification process to become a practitioner, to be able to administer the EMP, to work on recruiting folks, finding folks. So that could be going to conferences, answering lead inquiries. It also involves running the certification workshop. So we do Zoom producing. We have a practitioner base now of over 600 practitioners in 39 countries around the world. So we're very global, and therefore bringing people together over Zoom is a great opportunity for folks to network and come together through this assessment. So yeah, a long-winded answer. I apologize.
No, that's great. And, you know, you mentioned in there that I know we've worked together, and I'm a master trainer using the Entrepreneurial Mindset Profile. And in fact, it actually features in my current book that I've just co-authored with Jonathan Beam, which is The Momentum Mindset, How to Overcome Your Inertia and Achieve an Incredible Life. And on page 60, there's a section around entrepreneurial mindset profile, which looks at all of those skills. And the book is actually based on a lot of the work I've done in the space around using the EMP tool and coaching as well over the past few years. So, you know, I've seen a lot of people when I've worked with them using the profile EMP at the start and at the end of their coaching journey, the differences in the skill scales particularly can be very, there can be very different answers there. And it's a fascinating tool that can really showcase and can really show systemic change if someone wants to work on themselves as well, on their skills. So I'm a big advocate of what your team have done and what you're doing. And, you know, it's great to have you on the show today. So what does the future hold for the Leadership Development Institute at Eckerd College? What are your plans in the future?
Well, the Leadership Development Institute is very large in the sense that the EMP is just a tiny part of it. So the Leadership Development Institute delivers training to individuals and provides coaching. So we are a network associate of the Center for Creative Leadership, CCL, and they are world renowned in delivering leadership programs. And we're one of only, I believe, two in North America institutes who can deliver CCL's programming, such as the Leadership Development Program is their flagship program. But in addition, inside of the Leadership Institute, we have a Mediation Training Institute, MTI. We have a lot of acronyms, if you haven't guessed. and a second assessment called the Conflict Dynamics Profile, the CDP. Yes. And so LDI as a whole continues to grow. I mean, the pandemic, you know, we all had to pivot and we were delivering strictly in-person programs on the LDI side. And now we have expanded our business because we realize that both the in-person and the online still hold a place, even though we're not in lockdown anymore. So that has increased our size quite a bit. And we continue to work very closely with CCL. They've got some programs like Better Conversations Every Day and Lead for Success very involved in. But in terms of the EMP and the Mediation Training Institute, we really are excited about connecting the dots and bringing together our practitioner communities. So folks who are certified mediators, both train the trainer programs and becoming certified in the conflict dynamics profile, making that connection between the EMP and the CDP. And I know you recently got certified in the conflict dynamics profile. And we're just really excited because we see more and more, right, innovation teams. You need to be able to manage and resolve conflict to be able to be ideating and executing. It's so important. Conflict exists everywhere. And for us, the name of the game isn't to eliminate conflict. It's to teach people to be conflict capable in that they can, in a constructive way, resolve it. And so you'll be seeing more in terms of using those tools together. That's something going forward that we're excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've certainly learned a lot about even my style as I deal with conflict. And also it's helping working with my coaching clients and clients that I'm working with in terms of a training capacity to be able to help them navigate through conflict situations. So I really enjoy working, you know, with both of the tools as well as I expand my business in the UK and in Australia. So, and I know you're in the process of becoming qualified as a CDP practitioner yourself.
Yes, yes, I am. I am at the point where I need to administer my trial CDP and have my follow-up session. So I'm following in your footsteps, Vicky.
That's brilliant, Deborah. Wow, you've got some great experience there working at Eckerd College and over the past 5 years and beyond. And what would you say would be the toughest part about working in your role and what you do now?
That's a good question. So I think my answer would be is it's fulfilling, but it is tough, right? The mission. So the Leadership Development Institute, all of executive and continuing education at Eckerd, our budget, all of our revenue goes to support the college. So we help fund tuition and scholarships and some of the operating expenses for the college. And so unlike a traditional business where the business owner may reinvest in the business to continue growing it, we have the goal or the task to kind of start back at zero again every year and bring in revenue because we're turning it over to support the college, which is a wonderful mission. But at the same time, it does make it tough because we're continuing to want to grow the business and do more. But we need to be very steadfast and innovative in how we go about doing that.
You know, you mentioned about your curiosity and about, you know, in terms of other soft skills, would you say, what are the top soft skills would you need in terms of like particularly what you use in your role now? Would you say they would be as you are in a role where you have to grow the business every year? What would you say the top skills would be and what's important for you?
Yeah, for me personally, I would say problem solving and emotional intelligence. The problem solving more for the internal, you know, the running of the business and the emotional intelligence for doing the business development, sales, and the practitioner support, right? It's super important. Yes, we have a tool to sell and certification to sell, but it's really important to know what's of value to our clients, our customer. And because when this instrument was developed, it was originally thought it would be used with mostly corporate clients because we had somebody approach LDI wanting to increase innovation in their organization. And because there wasn't anything really out there assessment-wise, and we do assessment-based learning at LDI, that's kind of what set us on the journey of developing it. And we've learned over the years that we have a much larger, broader clientele than we realized. It's not just corporate. It's also education. It's also government and nonprofit. And so because of that, that emotional intelligence, I think, really comes into play in being able to listen and understand what the client needs and be able to tailor why the EMP is important and how it can be valuable to them.
So I'm curious, it is essentially what your role is essentially like running a business and being a business owner. And I'm curious, have you ever considered starting your own business in the past? Or is it something that longer term you would love to be involved in or maybe investing in other startups or helping female founders, for example?
Sure. It actually was never anything that crossed my mind. And from a family on my father's side, they did have a family business. They imported costume jewelry. And I saw that firsthand. It honestly never had crossed my mind. Although I do feel like in terms of my work ethic, right? Yeah. I feel like sometimes I've got the work ethic of an entrepreneur where it's, you know, all consuming. But no, I hadn't considered it for myself. My husband and I joke around, we're frequent flyer mile hotel points, and a lot of people come to us for advice.
Oh, wow.
So we kind of joked around about maybe we should do some kind of consulting around that. But no, I haven't thought about that.
Yeah. Do you know what? I speak to a lot of people who are in roles and, you know, paid employment, and they love what they do. And when I ask that question to them, similar to yourself, some of them have watched their family members, you know, grow businesses. And it's entrepreneurship's not for everyone, and nor should it be, really. It's not something that, because it is, it's almost like that freedom versus comfort, isn't it? And it's, you know, I didn't actually start my first business until I was 38. Even though I showed signs of being an entrepreneur, I think what you are as well is you're an entrepreneur working in an organization.
Yes. And it's so true. We talk about that entrepreneurial and entrepreneurial mindset. And that is really something interesting that you touched on, because our assessment title is Entrepreneurial Mindset Profile. And there are some people who kind of shy away when they see that word entrepreneurial, because they immediately think starting a business. Yeah. And really, it's the mindset. And just like you with the momentum mindset and having a growth mindset, we all need an entrepreneurial mindset, not to start a business per se, but when you think about things like risk acceptance, nonconformity, idea generation, persistence, passion, optimism. These are all things that we all experienced needing when all of a sudden we were locked down for the pandemic, right? We had to figure out how to do our day-to-day jobs all of a sudden from home and do it remotely. We had to have persistence and we had to be able to be nonconformists and ideate to come up with ways to get around these challenges. And students coming through university, we need our graduates to have an entrepreneurial mindset to be able to take on the challenges of this world that's forever changing. So
absolutely. No, yeah. I totally agree. And I've been reading a lot recently about neuroplasticity, if I can say the word plasticity, and about how you can retrain your brain to do, you know, whatever you want to do in the future and how your thoughts become beliefs and actions as well. And there's lots of there's lots of research out there saying that you can retrain your brain to do and live a life what you want to live. And it's incredibly fascinating. I don't know if you've ever come across or you've read work around that. I know we're going off track a little bit, but in terms of, you know, having that optimistic mindset and being able to believe that, you know, even in your role at Eckerd College, that you can every year fulfill all those financial targets and do better every year, and having that belief that you can do it. It's really, mindset is huge, and how you can scientifically retrain your brain and all the neurons in your body to be able to change the neuroplasticity. It's quite fascinating. So there's a lot of, I'm reading a lot about that at the moment as well. It's quite fascinating stuff. But speaking of sort of things around your mindset, tell our listeners, are you fearful of anything, Deborah? Is there anything that you would say, you know, what are you fearful of?
Now, this is where this becomes the psychologist, the therapist couch, right? For me. That fear of failure or letting others down, right? Yeah. So I tend to put a lot of responsibility on my shoulders, right? I take ownership for what I do. And so I recognize what I bring to the table affects the bigger group or the team. And so I always want to make sure that I'm doing my part. So I don't want to let people down. And that can tie into, you know, we talk about EMP scales, right? Action orientation is one of them. So I can almost be too action oriented, right? Responding to emails too quickly, and it also kind of raises the bar to the point where things may not be sustainable. So I have to really watch that.
Yeah. And you're right. I think I can resonate with what you've said about, you know, not wanting to let people down, because I know when I was in my full-time teaching career, way back 10 years ago, I actually got burnout. It was crazy because I knew it was coming. I was working around the clock and I was saying yes to a lot of things, when in actual fact, sometimes it was about saying no, but also being able to say yes to myself as well and my health and wellness and various things. So I got the burnout t-shirt years ago, but I think it's very common when you talk about the fear of failure. Interestingly, some people are fearful of massive success and they can hold themselves back as well. Have you come across in that space?
That is, it's very true. It's funny because I adore my colleague who, you know, Nancy Pridgen.
Yes.
And she is the person who does all of the follow-up sessions as people are coming through certification. And I have set her on such a pedestal and doing that so high, it's almost to the point where I don't want to be the one to go and debrief somebody. She just is the creme de la creme on that. And I do think I get in my own way, especially standing up and presenting. I'm much better sitting down, and I could still be with a big group of people. But the standing up and presenting, I get in my own head.
Sure. And, you know, I don't think it's uncommon, Deborah, because there's a lot of people who know what their strengths are, know what they prefer. And in some ways, it's that comfort level as well, and maybe getting other people to do different things. You know, I always used to think that from a financial standing point, before I was running my business full time, I used to think, oh, I'm not really that good with finances. I can, you know, get someone else, my partner, to do all that. But actually, it was almost something that I'd said to myself for years, but I am really savvy with the finances and I know it, but it is very, you can get in your own way and you can start to believe things about yourself as well, isn't it? And I think everybody has things that they might not share, but equally vulnerability is strength. And, you know, you being on the podcast today, there may be someone on listening who might think, you know what, there is something that Deborah said today that has made me, you know, almost trigger that person to create change in their life based on it. So it's great for you to share these things as well.
Yes.
So Deborah, what would you say is the bravest or scariest thing you've ever done?
Oh, Vicky, good question. I think I would have to say making it to the top of Mount Fuji to watch the sunrise and then having to get back down to the bottom. It was an amazing journey. We started at like 9 o'clock at night, and it was just following up a bunch of flashlights to the top of this mountain. And we made it up there for sunrise. It was absolutely beautiful. I've got my walking stick that I brought home with me to the US. But going down, it was so slippery because of the rock rubble. And it was really hard on the knees, but made it in one piece, no injuries, and can say it was an absolutely amazing experience. I highly recommend it to anybody who might be traveling to Japan.
And do you, you know, sometimes in your life, if you have some challenges, do you think back to that moment where you thought, well, if I can climb Mount Fuji, I can do whatever? Do you ever use that as an anchor for yourself to get through things?
That's interesting. I don't know that I've in those moments per se, but I very much can pull that visual up and still see. It almost looked like there was a line splitting the world in half from top to bottom standing up there. So it definitely fills me with positivity. But that's interesting. I may try that, you know, the next time I'm in a bind. So thank you.
Well, I only know that because I once ran a marathon, and it was a few years back now, but it wasn't just the race on the day. It was the 6 months training to it.
Yeah.
So I know when I've got, you know, in business, there's ups and downs. And I know there's times where I have to really, really drill down to my resilience and look at my persistence and go, well, I ran a marathon. So this is, you know, there's other stuff pales into insignificance when you think about the stuff that you've done previously. And it's almost like a hook as well, maybe a positivity hook to help you through things. But it sounds like a fascinating adventure, and it sounds like something I'd love to do. But I'd love to see, you should share the photographs on your LinkedIn or share a blog about that. I'd love to hear more in that about
I should dig out pictures. Yes.
So tell me, have you ever had a mentor or a coach to help you along the way? In any of your career?
That's interesting, because I usually think about a mentor or a coach as someone who you would make an arrangement with in terms of it's very conscious and it's an agreement, right? Yeah. Between two people. So I don't know that I've had a formal mentor or coach. However, I have had many, many people along my journey who have been positive figures and provided guidance and advice. So yeah, I guess in a sense, but not formally.
Yeah, that's great. And tell me, what sort of things can you share some tips about how you would deal with setbacks and not giving up and having that extra resilience? Give us some tips for the listeners who have, maybe you've experienced some things in your life where you've had to really drill down and look at yourself and go, right, these are the tips. What would you share with other people to help them going through some tough times?
That's funny. This is where my scoring high on the entrepreneurial mindset profile scale of persistence definitely comes into play. And it can be detrimental because I can overplay it, but I do believe that in terms of my ability to just keep trying, keep at something, try another way, and want to be able to achieve and be able to get to over the other side of whatever speed bump or challenge there is, plays in my favor. And then there's that sense of accomplishment afterwards, right? So it's that motivation then to keep on going.
Yeah. How do you celebrate your wins?
Ooh. You know, I tend to, they get me all jazzed, right? Like that energizes me. And so it's probably by continuing to work, it gives me energy, right? Yes. So it's almost probably jumping into the next thing. I don't know that I step back to celebrate enough. Maybe that's something to reflect on.
Yeah, maybe. And I think, I mean, certainly I know your work ethic. In fact, I've worked with a lot of people and I think your work ethic has to be like a standout for me. And just your, and I mean, I did think to myself at one point, you know, does Deborah, do you ever, are you able to switch off from work? But I know you do things outside of work. So what do you do to relax outside of work? What are your strategies? What are the things that you like to do?
Well, I am very, very fortunate living in St. Petersburg, Florida. My husband and I are right on the water. And so being and watching the dolphins and the sunsets definitely rank up there. We also have a really great craft and microbrew industry in St. Petersburg and in the Tampa Bay area. So we definitely love to get our share of local brewery beer. And nice. I like to swim. I know you do as well, but swimming definitely is for exercise and for relaxation. It's just very freeing.
Nice. Do you swim in the ocean over there or is it in a local pool? Or
actually, more in a pool. Yeah.
I was going to say,
open water swimming.
You do have sharks in where you are.
Yeah,
as well.
There are some in the Gulf of Mexico. True. I thankfully have never come into contact with one.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. I know when I was in Western Australia full time in Perth, I'm currently in London at the moment, but I know when I was there, I did do open water swimming, and I did do some triathlons, but it did make me feel quite nervous. So I did prefer swimming in a pool where there's just, it takes away the any, I don't like to think I don't like to think too much about it, but it's like when you're in the ocean, you know that you're not on your own.
Sure.
You never know. So tell me about, in terms of, have you got tips for our listeners who, for staying positive and being optimistic, and, you know, what tips could you share with them? Or do you have any strategies that really, you talked about your persistence, but do you have any tips to help people to stay, or how do you stay positive or optimistic?
You know, it's funny, when I worked, I mentioned working at Golf Channel, and they're now part of NBC Sports Group. But at the time that it was just Golf Channel, one of their core values was be an owner. Yeah. And as someone like myself, I take ownership in everything that I do. So I think it's really important to have that growth mindset. And that there's nothing to be gained by resisting change. And for so many of us, it's hard to be positive and optimistic in the face of change. And so much is changing right now, right? Everybody's talking about AI and ChatGPT. But I think embracing growth and approaching situations as a learning opportunity helps, I think, with positivity and being optimistic. It may not be comfortable, but if instead of concentrating on the discomfort, we kind of open ourselves up to seeing the value, I think can be helpful with that.
I love that. Turning them into learning opportunities. I really love that, the way you've described that. So great tips there. So what does success look like for you, Deborah, in the future?
Oh, I love this question, Vicky, because I really feel strongly that success means something different for each person. I've learned this just from working with some of the entrepreneurs who I've encountered. Even that stage, it's different. It's not necessarily making your business one that's multi-million dollar or opening chains, you know, spanning countries. Success is different for different people. And for me, I just want to be productive and help others and continue to grow and better myself. I believe, I kind of tease our dean, that Eckerd College's slogan should be Eckerd for a lifetime, because it's not just for undergraduate students. With working in executive and continuing education, we offer summer camps to youngsters and have pre-college programs. And then there's adult learning. We've got this Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. And I want to be one of those lifelong learners. I just think it's fantastic. And for me, success would be able to enjoy my professional life and do a good job balancing personal family life and just continuing growing and being able to help others.
Fantastic, Deborah. Thank you so much for sharing your answers there. I'm just curious, one final question. Have you got any final tips for anyone who's feeling stuck at the moment and wants to get out of a negative situation and live life on their terms? Any final tips for listeners?
It may be cliche, but truly making time for wellness, because things can seem, you know, when we feel stuck, right? Or we feel negative, I really think exercise, meditation, journaling, all of that, I think really does help get started with the unstuck and leaning on your support network and system and people in your life. And then for me, I know this rings true, but trying to break down challenges into smaller tasks, because when I feel overwhelmed, something just looms so large. And instead of looking at the big end game, trying to break things down into smaller chunks so they're more digestible, I think can help with the anxiety and feeling stuck.
Yeah, I love that as well. I think that's a great tip for listeners. So, well, thank you so much for your time, Deborah. And I wish you all the best, very best with what you're doing at Eckerd College. And yeah, I think you're doing a fantastic job. And I'm looking forward to seeing what you do next in terms of your role. And it's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Vicky. It was a great opportunity. I just adore working with you.
Oh, likewise. Thank you, Deborah. Thank you.